Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to episode 38 of the Runner's World podcast with me, Rick Pearson, and he, Ben Hobson. Each Tuesday, we'll be bringing you all the latest news, views and interviews from across the running world. Ben, what have we got coming up this week?
It's an education session. This will be learning more about the greatest runner that you've never heard of, a man called Al Howie. Al was a Scottish-Canadian ultra runner who trained on beer, was once chased by Interpol, and set numerous running records, including running across Canada. His story is ram-packed with fake names, bizarre IDs, alleged kidnappings, poverty, addiction, and deportations. Author Jared Beasley has written a book about Howie, and we will be on the line with him to tell us more.
Lovely. Sounds good. Yeah, I have to say, Al Howie wasn't a name before we started putting this episode together that I had heard of, but his running CV is absolutely remarkable. It's sort of the stuff of a Hollywood movie, actually.
Yeah, definitely. It probably will be soon.
Yeah. Yeah, directed by... Well, probably by Jared, but maybe with help from
us.
From you and
it's
I.
It's about time. Guest of the week, here in the studio. Guest of the week, sometimes on the phone. Could be an athlete,
could be a physio, or a complete unknown. Jared, welcome to the Runner's World podcast.
Well, thank you for having me. It's good to be on.
No, it's great, and we appreciate you getting up early in the morning to be on, because I know you're in New York at the minute.
That's right, but I'm making it.
So your book, In Search of Al Howie, it's kind of the story of the greatest runner maybe people haven't heard of. And I wondered, how did you first come to hear about Al Howie?
I got really put on a quest to find him by an eccentric neighbor of mine in Manhattan. And he used to run some of these races. They were some of the longest races in the world. And he wanted to find his old friend, and he wanted me to tell his story. And then I went looking for him, and I found him in a care facility in British Columbia, and that started the whole thing, a two-year conversation with him until he died in 2016.
Do you remember what your first conversation was like with him? Was it as you expected it would be?
It was horrible.
Right.
He couldn't communicate.
Right.
The first time, especially. It was literally a bunch of grunts and him breathing, and I was worried that I was bothering this person. And then he said abruptly, call back next Wednesday, and I heard the phone hit the table. And then
right.
The nurse was on, and she was like, oh, that's great. That's better than he usually does.
Right.
That was the first time, yeah.
I'm interested in why someone like Al would have started running in the first place, because we hear a lot about people kind of running as a way to deal with their mental health. Do you feel like he falls into that category?
Absolutely. He started to fight his addictions, like a lot of people, but he had a lot of things going on, and it's really important to understand that on top of all that, like, I think he was on the spectrum,
right.
You know. He just had an inability to really connect in the same way that a lot of people do. But having said that, he could also be very charming and witty, and he could hide it very well. But it's important to remember that he was on the run from Interpol for years. He was using fake names, IDs. Some of the first races that he won, he won them under other names. His name's not even Al.
Right.
It's Arthur John, you know, and he's from Salt Coats, Scotland. And so he was on the run. He was paranoid, and he was quitting his addictions. He had a kid. And he was not really cut out to be a dad, and he had taken that kid from England, and then they had bounced around Turkey and Greece before he ever got to Canada. So he had a lot of things going on besides his own DNA. So running was the way that he dealt with it, and he started out going ultra mega distances pretty early on.
I feel like there's a real divide between Al. I'm going to call him Al, even though now I know it's not his name, but there's a real divide between Al, the man, and then Al, the runner. So I think
that's why I called it In Search of Al Howie. I wanted to try to bridge that gap and try to find out, you know, the answer to that myself.
So let's talk a bit about Al the runner, because I feel like some of the things that he did, we can come back to Al the man himself, but the running feats that this guy did, and I think in the modern world of running, he would probably be sponsored by Hoka and would be the most celebrated ultra runner out there. But like back then, it was he was a sort of fringe guy.
Absolutely. Even today, he would be, the distances are unthinkable. I mean, he was a hippie. He was somewhat of a social malcontent, and he lived in tremendous poverty. So he ran hundreds, sometimes thousands of miles, two races, would win the races and then have to run back. He would ship his clothes on buses from city to city. And that's how he got started doing mega distances. He ran from Winnipeg to Ottawa. That's 1,000 miles. And he entered a 24-hour race. He wins the race, you know, and then he has to go back. And so he was doing distances. I mean, you think about 1991, he did 5,800 miles in 103 days.
Whoa, that's crazy.
But to even break that down, to look at how that happened, it becomes something else in my mind. It's transcendent in a way. I mean, you're talking about running the FKT across Canada, 4,500 miles in 72 days, 10 hours. That alone, that's great. You know, I mean, that's amazing. He's got a plaque on mile zero. But it was only 2 weeks later that he was at the starting line of what was then the longest race in the world, the 1,300-mile race. That's a race from New York to Miami. And he enters that. He runs 86 miles a day for the first 11 days, breaks that world record, and runs 1,300 miles in 16 days, 19 hours. So that's how you put those two together, and then you have the 5,800 miles, you know, I mean, that he did in 103 days. It's just unbelievable.
Yeah, you're right. It's almost hard to comprehend that. I wonder what effect talking to someone like Al, who does, you know, who's achieved such unbelievable feats, what effect it had on you. Did you start to reframe what you thought was possible, and how did it affect your running?
It affected my running a lot in that I wanted to try to have some kind of idea. You know, myself, I was a guy that just didn't run more than 10K. I ran 3 miles a day. That was my yoga. But when I was researching the book, I wanted to have some kind of taste. So I entered a couple of 12-hour races around a one-mile loop. And it was just a different sport. That's the best way I can describe it. And that's nothing. I tried to do, in one day, in 12 hours, which was his running day when he was running across Canada, I tried to do 63 miles. And that's what he did every day for 72 days. And I couldn't do it. I tried 2 years to do it. I couldn't make it.
Wow.
He was a phenomenon, essentially. Like, sure. He's got this physicality that just meant that he was capable to do it. And then the physicality perhaps driven by a lot of different mental things.
Yeah, he had a tremendous ability to distract himself from the pain, from the boredom, all these things. It's amazing. And he was miraculously injury-free for most of his career until after this peak year of 91 that we just talked about.
Yeah.
And then after that, he had a fairly rapid decline. So he was all legs and lung, legs and lungs, as one runner said. He looked like Jesus in running shorts. He's a hippie looking guy, you know. But he did have a tremendous ability to take the boredom and the pounding, and he did have speed. He was a 2:29 marathoner. He had the legs, and he didn't even start running until he was 30.
Well, yeah. He was a smoker, right?
3 packs a day.
Wow.
Yeah.
My word.
Yeah, but he quit that. That's when he started running, and he was a big, big drinker. That run, that 1,000-mile run that we talked about a minute ago from Winnipeg to Ottawa to run the 24-hour race, he was sponsored by Miller Beer, and he was running, they said, at a 17-beer-a-day pace.
Oh, my God.
And then he drank one per hour during the 24-hour run.
Wow.
So he's fueling, like, his modern-day race strategy was beer.
Beer, Yeah, that was one of the first things he said. He opened up after the third or fourth conversation that we had, and I asked him how he warmed up, and he just scoffed at that. He said, "Oh, that's a waste of energy, man." I said, "Well, what did you do?" He goes, everybody was stretching and, doing their little laps and getting warmed up, and I was there knocking back a pint." And he said he loved the look on their faces when, he was on the podium.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he ate a horrible dirtbag diet as well. I mean, fish and chips and beer. That was him.
What do you think that the modern runner, Ben talks about this, might be sponsored by Hoka or, lives a much more kind of pious life than Al. But what do you think that we can learn from Al's example? I mean, presumably not all this would be recommended, but maybe his kind of approach has some lessons in it. What do you think?
I think there are a lot that you can take away that go well beyond running. I mean, right now the Biggs Backyard Ultra is going on right now.
Yeah,
there's four runners left. And those guys, there's not a lot of money in that, and they're tired. They haven't slept for 2 days. And they're all of four of them have got to be asking themselves, what the hell am I doing here? Why am I doing this to myself? Yeah. And I think for Howie and for modern runners or anybody in general that would try to relate to Howie, he was really someone who was a misfit. He didn't ever have a niche. He was not sponsored at that time except to get running shoes, things like that. He didn't have gels, compression socks, GPS watches, none of those things. But what he did was that he expressed himself in the way that he could. And for people who are fighting to find some kind of identity for themselves, and they may not be the most socially, adept people, they're all looking for some way to deal with the world. And that's how he dealt with it, was with miles and with running nonstop. And when he couldn't do that anymore, he couldn't function. And ultimately, that is what led to his decline. It wasn't the diabetes. He kept running after the diabetes. He had a rare form of adult onset type 1 diabetes. It's very odd for somebody like that. But he kept running after that. He kept winning after that. He ran four ultras in 1998. He won four, and then the next year he was gone, obscurity. And 2 years after that, he was in a home.
Did you get a sense when you talked with Al that he was proud of what he'd achieved in his previous running life? Was there any kind of contentment that he took from his achievements?
I would really like to say yes, but I didn't feel that. I sensed some bitterness of not being recognized, not being known. And he was not so expressive of his emotions.
Right.
That way. I'm sure that he is very proud of what he did, because he could remember splits. He could remember numbers like a savant. He just knew them. They were in his blood, and he would just trip them off, just bam, bam, bam. Going way, way, way back. He started running with Terry Fox, his first race in 1979. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, right. So Terry Fox is obviously the famous Canadian who attempted to run across Canada and died in the process, right? That's Terry.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And he ran with Don Ritchie. And Don Ritchie really saved Howie when Howie ran the British end-to-end, the John O'Groats to Land's End. And Howie broke that record in 1988. He ran it in 11 days. I think the previous record was almost 20 days or something like that. And then after that, Don Ritchie broke it the next year. Of course, Don Ritchie was really a manimal. He was a fantastic runner.
Yeah.
But then it's just a matter of hours, Howie was really, in a lot of things that he did, he was the first one to really show what could be done, to really break it open. And after that, it was a run. It was not a jaunt,
Jared, where can people find more about the book and about Al?
They can find the book on Amazon.uk. We had an article or two come out about a week ago, and we got hit hard. The Amazon stores got hit hard. So if you see some message that says, a delivery expected within, the next 3 to 5 years, just ignore that.
Right.
Ignore that. They're ordering the books back. They're trying to get them. Of course, you can get the Kindle. You can download that
Yeah.
any time. You can find out more about Howie on my website, which is jaredbeasleyny.com. I got a lot of pictures there. There's a Facebook page that I started for him while he was alive. I did that for him. He was pretty uninterested in that, but at that point. But I made him a little iPod, one of those little shuffles, you know, little tiny jobs. And he could work it because it was really simple, and he loved that. But I tried so many different things to help him out. And, yeah.
Well, I think that the running community and the world itself will probably fully enjoy hearing all about Al and discovering a runner who perhaps they wouldn't have ever have heard of. So I think from that point of view, it's a great thing. I look forward to reading the book. And, yeah, thanks so much for joining us on the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me and letting me talk about Al Howie. It's always great.
His fingers on the button, his ears to the ground. He's done a bit of Googling and he's had a nose around.
He's a detective wearing running shoes, carrying the coffee and his weekly running news.
With his compass point focused directly on N for news. It's Kerry McCarthy.
That's what you've spent the last few minutes thinking about.
10 seconds. Gold.
Wow. Well, anyway, hello, everybody. I'm sure you get the idea. Welcome. From that introduction. I'm the news dude. Got three bits for you this time. The first is regarding GB's very own middle distance running superstar, Ailish McColgan, who had a triumphant end to what has been a very long season for her. If you watched the World Championships earlier this month, you may have seen that she came 10th in the final of the 5,000 metres, which ordinarily wouldn't be great, but she actually ran a significant PB in that race, as did 11 of the 15 finalists. So it was a pretty rapid race, so I don't think she could have done much better, really. But she had one final push in the tank this last weekend. She won the Great South Run, and in the process clocked a new Scottish record, which was previously held by her own mother.
Oh, yeah.
Liz McColgan.
Family bragging rights. Yeah.
Yeah, it's been held since 1997, the time of New Labour, Jerry Halliwell's Union Jack dress, Chumbawamba flying high in the charts. so it's been waiting to be broken, really. Ailish ran, what did she run? She ran 51.36, which is beats her mum's time of 52 dead by 24 seconds or whatever it is. So that's not, you know, she didn't just scrape by. And now the only Brit to go faster than her is Paula Radcliffe, 51.11.
Yeah, fair enough.
So she's done well there. I wonder how she's going to celebrate her off-season now she's done. I think, Rick, you and I were talking about this earlier. Yeah. I was saying that when I interviewed the former GB sprinter Craig Pickering once, he said that every off-season he would just take 2 weeks to go to New York and eat TGI Friday's burgers with his girlfriend.
Nice.
Which I think is kind of the way to do it, really. Yeah. If you were really athletes, how would you spend your off-season?
Oh, that's good.
Well, going by the off-season, the wonderful world of social media means that everyone post Doha was in the Caribbean. I saw a lot of that happening.
Yeah.
The Caribbean would probably be, I would probably do that.
Just having a kind of nice, you know, like rum and coke and something.
Yeah, just literally room service and beaches.
Yeah. I think I'd do a kind of food and wine tour of Italy. Just massive, like just pizza and pasta every night.
I'm glad you added that last bit because that was starting to sound incredibly highbrow in off season.
Yeah.
A novel, you know. How about you, Kay? What are you going for?
I think I would channel Ben Stiller at the end of Dodgeball and I would just eat. Yeah. If you've not watched it, check it out. Watch the rest of the movie first. Anyway, moving on. It's time for yet more chat about that shoe.
Oh, good.
Oh, right.
Yeah. The controversial Nike shoe, which was worn by Eliud Kipchoge in his triumphant sub-2 attempt recently, is going to be known as the Alpha Fly when it comes out, in case you didn't know that. It's on the verge of being ratified by the IAAF as legal, despite
their rules.
Written complaints. Well, this is the problem. Their rules say many people, not to get to Donald Trump about it, but many people have been saying... that the rules are not fit for purpose anymore. There have been written complaints from non-Nike athletes who say it gives Nike athletes, you know, too big of an advantage. I'm not going to go into all the technology of what's in the shoe, but there has what's been technically known as kerfuffle about this, possibly even a smidge of hullabaloo. It can take as much as 2 minutes off your marathon time, according to some people, which, you know, at the pointy end of the field, that's what, the difference between first and fourth, or something like that. Yeah. But on Monday the 20th of this month, which is yesterday, if you're listening to this on the day the podcast comes out, the IAAF's Technological Committee had a big conference call along with scientists from the University of Queensland and some legal experts. Sean Ingle, The Guardian's chief sports reporter, is reporting that the technical committee will make a proposal to the IAAF Council, probably sometime in the next 2 to 3 weeks, that a running shoe should be regarded as legal, providing it gives no, air quotes, motor assistance to an athlete.
Right.
Whoa. So basically, if the only thing moving the shoe forward is a person's legs, it's fine.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
That's what he has been told is going to happen. What do you think about that?
Well, I just can't wait for the Heelys marathon shoe to come out so that you can see all these shoes that kids used to skirt around on with little wheels in the heels. There you go. That's going to be the latest one.
It's really tricky, isn't it? It's there's no simple solution to this, but yeah, I think arguably the item that you could say is, should carbon fibre plates be allowed in shoes?
Yeah, I mean, and what you were saying about the percentage value of how much time it takes off at the sharp end of marathons at the elite level, It's actually, I think the bigger thing is possibly more the impact from a financial point of view for people just running as an amateur. Like, if you want to be now competing, if you're a super good runner but you haven't got the coin and you want to be the guy who wants, you know, if the other people have got the next percent and stuff like that, like, you've got to be spending £250 to be competitive.
I don't know if it matters that much at the kind of high amateur sub-elite level, but I mean, the money thing is interesting because, you know, obviously medals translate into money for elite athletes. Sure. And if you're missing out on the podium by 4 or 5 seconds because you're wearing, you know, brand X, then you might have got that shredded wheat endorsement or whatever it was if you got a medal. Yeah. Then, you know, that's you know, let's not forget that track and field is not Premier League football. These people are not multi-millionaires. You know, many of them have to go and get, you know, standard-ish jobs afterwards or go into the media or whatever. So they need to make the most of their ability while they can. So there's definitely that kind of spanner to throw into the works. Yeah. But we will see what happens. And finally, moving on to something a little more, altogether more genteel and old school and normal and relatable for you listeners out there, the ones based in England anyway, sorry everyone else. It concerns Forestry England, which is a governmental body tasked with looking after, you won't be surprised to hear, forests in England.
Oh, wow.
I know.
How cryptic.
they've gone for the Ron Seale approach with the name there. Runners can now explore 200 kilometres of trails. They've basically marked up trails for people who would like to go for a run through one of their forests but don't have the confidence or afraid of getting lost or, you know, just need a little bit of guidance. There are 18 forest locations where they've done this to start with so far. Each trail has been designed for runners of all abilities and they range, I think, from 1 kilometre to 10K.
Nice.
Obviously with the aim of providing people with the opportunity to kind of get out, explore, do a bit of kind of, I guess, speedy forest bathing, really, and improve their health in the process. So if you want to find out where your nearest marked trail is, then you need to go to forestryengland.uk/running. It's a good idea, isn't it?
It's a great idea.
It's a great idea. Yeah, I think we all think that lots of these green spaces aren't run or walked enough. So anything that encourages people to do that, I think, is to be celebrated.
Solid
yeah?
idea.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Thanks, mate.
No worries.
So that brings us to the end of this week's Runner's World podcast. I'd like to say a big thanks to our guest, Jared Beasley, and to Number 8 Studios in Soho, where this was recorded.
For more news, reviews, interviews, and much, much more from the wider world of running, please head over to runnersworld.com/UK. Please like and subscribe on iTunes. Please leave a little comment, tell us how great we are. And thanks to Acast, our hosting partner. Thanks for listening, and we will see you next week.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.